2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer with you until 4 o'clock. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, kind enough to join us every week. Always enjoy his time. Arif Hassan, our guest, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage. Find his work there, zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, we appreciate the time. Linval Joseph, the most recent Viking defensive player to get a contract extension, came to the agreement over the weekend. And I asked you this question about Xavier Rhodes and Everson Griffin when they signed theirs. So I'll ask you about Linval. What numbers stood out to you with his deal?
I think the last time you asked me about Xavier Rhodes, I brought up the idea of adjusting every deal to the cap environment they're in. A deal signed in 2013 is generally going to have a lot less money and a deal signed in 2017, but they incur the same burden to the team. So if you take a look at it from that perspective, I compared him to all the nose tackles, and he's got the fourth or fifth highest cap hit for nose tackles after you adjust, you know, for the fact that the 2017 cap is higher. So that stands out to me, that he's only the fifth highest paid nose tackle, where to me, in my head, you know, and maybe I'm biased, but I think this is true, he's the best nose tackle in the league. And if he's not, I think it is a very close race in the top three between him, Damon Harrison, and Brandon Williams. And if Jonathan Hankins has a comeback year, he'd be in that conversation too. But I think that he's very clearly in a very close race to the top three, and he's not even in the top three of nose tackle money. So I think that stands out to me. I think it was a very good deal for the Vikings.
Had he waited another year, because it wasn't as though his contract was set to expire? And actually, let's start with that. To you, is it somewhat noteworthy, Arif, that the Vikings gave extensions to Everson and Linval when they both had more than a year left before their current contract expired?
Yeah, and I'm going to plug this fantastic piece I found is at overthecap.com about the way the Vikings have been extending people who have 2 years left on their deal. It's a little bit tricky from the Vikings' perspective. It's good for the Vikings, and it's a little bit, you know, hinky from the player perspective. But what it does is it allows agents to say, we brought in a lot of guaranteed money for our client. You should sign with us, and you can pump these, like, a fantastic guaranteed number. Like, for example, Everson's, I think, has $34 million guaranteed. But the thing is, if you're going to extend a player that you're already in a contract with, then you're pretty much guaranteed to pay them over the next 2 years. And so it's they turned actual unguaranteed money into guaranteed money. But effectively, practically speaking, the Vikings didn't increase the burden at which they've restricted their flexibility, because they were going to, you know, pay that money out anyway. It was practically guaranteed. And so part of it is that it's an interesting negotiating tactic. That you can offer, guaranteed money that was already kind of guaranteed because you already wanted that player. And then some of it's also a cost control measure because, when those players hit free agency, not only are they hitting free agency in a larger cap environment, but they're also, because of the number of suitors that are allowed to talk to them, their price is probably going to be even higher. And so locking them down before they hit free agency, like when they initially re-signed Everson Griffin, it was days before free agency, and I thought that was smart, too. Whenever a player hits free agency, even if it's, a couple of days after you would have made a deal, their price goes, well up. And so I think that there's two pretty good negotiating tactics and cost control measures that the Vikings engaged in.
So if we're trying to be optimistic about this, is the win-win scenario within all of this that the Vikings perhaps save some money by paying these two now and don't let them hit free agency? And then for those two guys, Everson Griffin and Linval Joseph, they don't have to play with the worry and the burden of playing in a contract prove-it type year. If we look at it through that lens, can it be deemed a win-win for both?
Yeah, and I think so. One other aspect in which it's a win for the players is that the injury guaranteed is actually pretty substantial, and that I think is where the players, might be able to take some solace in the fact that maybe they're taking a little bit less money, but their contract, Linval's injury guarantee is far higher than the amount that he's, I think, actually guaranteed, which is something like $14 million. It's a good assurance that, if they continue playing, a pretty violent game and, there's some sort of Sharif Floyd-like accident, where a surgeon, commits an error, or there's just some in-game problem, that prevents them from playing, they will have a lot of security going forward. I do think it's a bigger win for the team than for the player. I'm not going to say, you know, the players, you know, came out way ahead, but I do think that there's definitely positives for the players.
What's the blowback? Like, what's the negative for the Vikings? Is it perhaps that you could have other players lining up saying, hey, the model is in place now. I want my extension before my current one expires. Like, I don't want to test free agency. I don't want to play in a prove it year where I could get hurt. You gave these guys extensions 2 years before they were set to expire with their current contract. That's the model in place. Like, could that be a negative for the Vikings going forward?
It could be, but I kind of doubt it, especially because the players that have the most leverage over them are the ones they just locked down. And so, you know, if Trey Waynes holds out, just as an example, he can't, he's on a rookie deal. But as an example, if Trey Waynes holds out, I mean, like, whatever. Like, it'd be nice, you know, if he played for them, but I mean, he hasn't proven anything. And so there's not much that he can do to hold out. It's pretty much, you know, a big win for the Vikings. It does reduce their flexibility going forward. You know, when they enter free agency this year, they're going to have a little bit less money, not a ton less because it's an extension, and so the initial numbers didn't change too much. So they're going to have a little less money to play with, and you know, if they want to change things around, if you know, if they decide, you know, Xavier Rhodes, really good corner, but you know, this guy just hit the market. We think he's just as good of a corner. It costs a lot less. You know, they may not be able to make that decision. So it does reduce their flexibility a little bit. But I don't think it reduces their flexibility very substantially. Again, they were going to pay these players anyway. So it really just concretizes something that they were already going to do.
Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon on The Blitz. What was that word you just used at the end? I've never... conquer something? What was it?
Concretize. You know, concrete. Concretize.
Oh, okay.
I probably should have used solidifies or something a little bit.
Yeah, went over my head, man.
I might have made that up. I'm not sure.
I'll take your word for it. Covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage. Find his work there, zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. This next one throwing your way, maybe it's someone in a contract year, maybe it's someone who isn't. Give me a couple of players on the Vikings who, for their career, Arif, this year is just uber critical. I'm assuming maybe one of those guys is Sam Bradford, who is playing in a contract year. But who are a couple of those players that you think this year is vital individually for their careers?
Yeah, I mean, there's some people that are not necessarily in a contract year where it's going to be important. Laquon Treadwell and Trey Waynes, I think, are in really significant years in terms of the way the Vikings are going to handle that position going forward. If Trey Waynes has, you know, a really poor year, you know, that's 3 years where he hasn't contributed to the Vikings. That might mean, you know, they don't, you know, activate their option, but it also might mean that they sign someone in free agency to replace them. So they may not be in a contract year. But their job could be at risk anyway. And so those are two players I would take a look at. Sam Bradford, obviously, like you mentioned. And then whoever wins the, or loses, rather, the linebacker spot, you know, I think that that's kind of critical. I think that Emmanuel Lemur and Edmund Robinson are both in make-or-break years for them. It's very easy for the Vikings to get rid of either of them after this year. If they don't win that starting job, you know, they may not have as much to offer as, you know, a developmental young guy. So I think that's important. Anderson Dejo, I think, is nearing the end of a deal, and I think he's improved a lot in camp. But I mean, Vikings fans know that Sendejo had a long way to go before, you know, you could consider him an average safety. I think he's there now. So to say he's improved doesn't always mean a lot. And if it turns out he hasn't improved, you know, the Vikings are almost assuredly going to try and find a solution at safety. So those are the guys, you know, I'm looking at that are in pretty critical stages of determining their career.
We haven't talked in a week. Training camp in Mankato wrapped up for the final time. What stood out in those last few days since we've last talked? Who or what had caught your eye?
I don't think anything in the last couple of days has changed my opinions on players. It's kind of, you know, moved me into different levels of certainty about the players. But, you know, I still think, you know, Dalvin Cook looks amazing. I reviewed Sam Bradford's, just in my head, I reviewed Sam Bradford's performance in camp, and I kind of realized, you know, he finished training camp with an interception, which sounds bad, but it made me realize he hasn't really thrown that any. I asked, you know, other people, you know, how many he threw in camp, and it was like, you know, someone said that was his only one, someone said he's thrown three, someone said he's only thrown two. Either way, very few interceptions in camp. And so we haven't actually been talking a lot about Sam Bradford's performance in camp. It seems very sort of by the numbers, and that's fine. That's who he is. But I'm like watching all of these other training camps, you know, Hackenberg went like 0 for 13 one day, I think. I know Carson Wentz went 0 for 12. I pay attention to that one a lot. There's some issues with, you know, what's happening with the Browns. You know, one day, you know, Deshaun Kizer's doing well. One day, you know, Brock Osweiler's doing well. But certainly some days they're just not doing well. And there's a lot of incomplete passes around the NFL, and there's just not. In Minnesota, and you know that's something that's worth noting, that Sam Bradford had a very good camp. It wasn't as explosive as maybe we wanted it, but it was a very good camp.
You brought up the name, you so lightly peppered in Carson Wentz and then threw in the comment saying that you're following along with him, obviously. So I'll ask you now, I don't want to get too off track, we'll get back to the Vikings, but as a sidebar note, ESPN wrote an article, I don't know if you saw it, naming one breakout star for every single team this year. And for the Eagles, it was none other than Carson Wentz. Your thoughts are what?
I think that's a little too optimistic. I think, I don't think I read the article in question, but I think someone told me about it. I think a lot of it had to do with the addition of Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith as receivers that, you know, I mean, one of the issues that the Eagles had last year is they had very poor receivers. And so I understand that, but I think that the fundamental problems with Wentz as a quarterback are not limited to the fact that his receivers aren't helping him as much. And so I think that there's a lot of issues that he has as a quarterback that I think won't be resolved. So I don't see him as a breakout star. My thoughts on that have been clear for a while. But I understand why people would think that.
Arif Hasan with us this afternoon on AM 1450. It is the Blitz. Back to the Vikings. One dude I was fascinated with post-draft, Arif, that I haven't heard much about, was Bucky Hodges, the tight end from Virginia Tech. Has he underwhelmed so far? Has he not, you know, raised any eyebrows from the coaching staff?
No, he's actually performed really well. I think it's just the lack of explosive play calling and playmaking from Sam Bradford, Pat Shurmur, that have restricted the opportunities for receivers to make big plays, and especially tight ends who aren't always, you know, running routes on passing plays. But he's actually had a really, really good camp. You know, there's the Mr. Mankato Award that awards, you know, sort of the late rounder long shot guy who makes the biggest impression in camp, but I think Bucky Hodges is certainly in the running for that given how well he's played. You know, he scored a lot of touchdowns in camp, and the thing that sticks out to me the most is, I mean, he didn't block as a tight end in college. In fact, his final year, you know, he was a receiver at Virginia Tech. You know, the previous years he was a tight end that was lining up outside the line, so he didn't really block all that much. But in camp, you know, he's actually looked like a pretty adequate blocker. Not like, you know, extremely good or anything like that, but certainly not the liability that, you know, maybe we thought he would be in the first year. So I think that Hodges has actually looked quite good.
How would you prefer the Vikings use him with the offense? Is he a tight end that you, I imagine, he's kind of the guy that you don't want to see maybe at all times lined up on the line of scrimmage, getting ready to block someone maybe before he releases. Is he someone that you'd like to see lined up maybe in the slot to the right or left or on the outside at certain given junctures?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, if you treat him like a receiver initially and move him around, you can get some pretty interesting matchups. And also one of the great things about a tight end like Bucky Hodges is that he'll reveal the coverage to the quarterback pretty quickly. If he's lined up on the outside and there's a corner over him, very good chance you're in zone coverage. If he's lined up on the outside and there's a linebacker over him, very good chance you're in man coverage. It's not a 100% rule, but it's a pretty good one. And, you know, you can use him like that because he's very used to being used like that. So I think that that's, you know, a very good way to use him. But I think maybe the long-term projection for him, I think he might be athletic enough for this, is to maybe think of him like Vernon Davis. You know, Vernon Davis was a really good blocker, so that's going to require a lot of improvement from Hodges. But he did a lot of fantastic work, even in line, just running up the seam. I think the route he was known for is called Y-Shake. There's a really good piece up at the defunct Grantland about Vernon Davis and the Y-Shake. But he does a really good job exploiting just sort of the natural coverage holes that come from an inline tight end running straight up the seam. And so I could see, in the long run, you know, Bucky Hodges being used that way. In the short run, move him around a lot. See what it does to the defense. See what you want to do against the defense that reveals himself that way.
Have we gained any clarity on position battles that were in question at the start of the summer? The one name that I keep coming back to and thinking of when I bring that question or pose it your direction is Pat Elflein. Perhaps there are others out there, but have we gained any clarity on those?
I don't think so. I think, you know, there's obviously the specialist battles. We're not going to know anything about that, even if I did know how to evaluate, you know, the punting game. But there's the weak side linebacker battle, like you mentioned. There was a nickel corner battle, but that was resolved before training camp even started. McKenzie's the starting nickel corner. There's some questions about the three technique, but the battle that's catching everyone's attention, you're right, is that center battle between Nick Easton and Pat Elflin. And Nick Easton was listed as the starter, and that's kind of notable because there are other players that are listed as ties, and center's not one of them. But, you know, even after the depth chart came out, you know, I saw Pat Elflin taking snaps with the ones, and Nick Easton taking snaps with the twos at times. So it's very clear that battle is ongoing. So I don't think any clarity has been given. I think this is more, if anything, like a veteran deference. Not that Easton's like this aged veteran or anything like that, but he's been with the team for, I want to say, 2 years now, maybe just one. There's some deference there, and I think that plays a role. But we're going to see, I think they said that we're going to see Elflin playing with the ones for a little bit in the preseason just to see how that goes. So no real clarity, despite the fact that they released a list that theoretically has clarity.
Preseason opener tomorrow in Buffalo. Who are you looking forward to watching and zoning in on from the purple and gold?
I think this is one of the best defensive lines I've seen the Vikings field, and that's an enormous compliment given the Vikings' history. And I'd like to see what they do against the run against Buffalo, because Buffalo has just this phenomenal run-blocking unit. Last year, they had one of the most interesting run-blocking lines in the league. You know, a lot of people say Dallas was the best. I think maybe that's true, but Buffalo, if they're not the best, they were, you know, a close second. So how they do against the run there is going to be fascinating. That's also a really good set of receivers, and, you know, the cornerbacks have been, you know, worrisome to me in camp. Not like a concern, but like, you know, if you want a top three defense, you know, maybe they're maybe not playing to that level. They're playing close to, you know, maybe if you got a top seven defense, you know, that sort of thing. So that's a good set of corners to test. That's a good set of receivers to test that corner against. And then, of course, pretty good defensive line. I want to see the offensive line play well.
We'll finish with our off notes. Jay Cutler goes to the Dolphins on a one-year deal. Presume that Ryan Tannehill will opt for surgery, be gone for the entire season. Is it possible? Am I crazy, or is it possible, Arif, that for this year, Jay Cutler could perhaps be an upgrade from Ryan Tannehill just for this year?
It's possible, but I think it's a little bit unlikely because he is coming off of that shoulder surgery, and he did have, you know, poor couple of games when he did play this year. I think that, you know, 2015 was fantastic. And he was with Adam Gase, the guy that's down in Miami. But I think that, you know, he's suffering from age, and so I think that it's kind of unlikely for him to hit his previous form. But it's certainly possible that he could outplay a Ryan Tannehill because the system that he's so familiar with, he's been successful in.
Devonta Freeman got a 5-year extension today by the Atlanta Falcons. I haven't seen the money yet. I haven't looked to see how much is guaranteed, what the total overall value is for him. But you've got guys like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson who are, a lot of people view them as the best running backs. Le'Veon Bell's had the contract dispute going back and forth. Could they be licking their chops seeing someone like Freeman get a 5-year extension, imagining what it could be that they end up getting?
Yeah, I think it'll impact the market for them, especially because we know Devonta Freeman to be an able pass catcher, just like, you know, Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. I think Bell and Johnson are even better pass catchers. But, you know, I think that this creates, some level of a market that they can work off of. But I expect both of them will think, and they're probably right, both of them will think that they deserve to be paid more than Devonta Freeman. So that's really just going to be sort of like a baseline that they're going to jump up from. I think it's certainly going to impact the discussions for sure.
Folks, go to zonecoverage.com, click the Vikings tab at the top of the page to find Arif's work. And Arif, as always, thank you for the time. It's always appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll wrap things up with some Twins talk next right here on The Blitz.